Hello and welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of The Philip Carter Show. I'm your host, Philip Carter, and today it's just me. I'd like to talk to you about performing, about my new books. Don't worry, it's not a sales pitch, they're not going to come out for ages. And just in general, where comedy's going, you know, what's going on in the world regarding censorship and stuff, but in a funny way. If it stops being funny, I'll just change the subject. So I did Bright Club recently, which is comedy for people who are experts in their field. That was at the King's Arms in Salford. My speciality was time travel in fiction, specifically the existentialist implications of time travel in literature and film. And I got to take the mickey out of numerous sci-fi time travel tropes. I got to complain about how pretty much every time travel story these days falls into the same trap of let's go back in time and stop a bad thing, which used to be interesting, but it's not explorative anymore. It's overdone. So I used that as a setup to a joke where I said, oh, I really hate how every single time travel story these days has to have a, oh, let's go back and meet Hitler episode. So anyway, guys, my next joke's going to be about that, and, you know, set it up like that. That was a lot of fun. And there's some really smart people there. Scientists, retired dentists. Oh, it was great. And a poet as well. Yeah, I'm saying Irm a lot. Sorry about that. I'm still buzzing from last night when this is my second hosting gig. I hosted Speakeasy. At Dulcimer's Charlton, which is like a mixed open mic night. It's mainly poetry, as most things are these days. Poets seem to have... They're sort of like an invasive species, aren't they? You know, you used to have red squirrels. We'll say like short story writers and comedians are red squirrels. The poets are the grey squirrels, you know. Which is funny, because they like to make themselves out to be less aggressive as a species, but somehow, by some fluke, they outnumber us, and they take over the open mic nights. And that's not actually what's happened here. I just enjoy that metaphor a lot. Speakeasy is my favourite poetry night, and I say that with some confidence, because I've been to a few, and Speakeasy is the only one I still go to. As much as I might be a poet, it's not something I talk about very often, and I don't actually enjoy much, if any, serious poetry, either writing or reading it, because I think the world's serious enough, you know? If I'm writing something serious, it has to be in the form of a short story, and it has to have some meaning to it that lights your brain up and you find fun. So even if it's a serious topic, it needs to be fun. And my issue with a lot of poetry is that it's not fun. Whereas at Speakeasy, a lot of the time it is. And that's why I keep going to it. And that is why I wanted to host it. I didn't actually ask to host it. My friend Ruth did that on my behalf because she knew I wanted to, but I didn't quite feel ready to ask. I didn't think I would be a good enough host. It was meant to be my first hosting gig. My second hosting gig was supposed to be at the Thirsty Scholar in Manchester. But, you know, timey-wimey, fucky-wookie, sometimes things happen backwards. So I wound up doing the Thirsty Scholar first a few weeks before. And I enjoyed doing that. Oh, I'm sorry, my laptop's just decided to develop asthma. That's okay. My microphone can filter it out, but it will irritate me. Yeah, so performing, hosting, it's something new to me that I didn't know I'd be good at. I mean, I did some stuff when I was a kid, and when I was at uni, I hosted the what was it? We had like a mini festival. I think we called it Marginalia Festival. I named it because the idea was like it was supposed to represent writers and ideas that were in the margins, and the term for the stuff you write in the margins is marginalia. And I thought that was really cool and literary. Bit of an issue handing it out to like students from other educational backgrounds, shall we say, sports students, psychology students, physicists, they all said, what the hell is marginalia? What does that mean? One person remarked, and I agree because I was thinking it at the same time, doesn't marginalia sound quite a bit like jam? Yes, it does. Marginalia does sound like it might be a type of jam. So we stuck to the name because I'm stubborn, and we'd already made the posters. And that was a lot of fun. I missed that. I remember our group didn't get along all the time, but groups never do. Which is, I think, that the primary issue with people labelling themselves as part of communities is communities are so massive and sprawling now that if you identify into any kind of group, anybody that hears that will only remember the side of that group that they've seen. So if they've seen a nasty facet of that group, they'll think that you're part of that, where you might be part of a different part of the group. You might be part of some subgroup of people who are really nice, which is why I don't like to identify as an atheist on the internet, because there's enough atheists with beards on the internet who make a living being dickheads to religious people. Now, I could do that, but to be quite honest, I got bored of it. No, and a lot of, you know, it's a weird thing, the community. But yeah, anyway, as I was saying, not to get too off track, I've just become self-aware then, not to get too off track, but I really enjoyed making this festival with people and hosting it. Maybe that's technically my first hosting gig. I've just remembered it whilst I'm doing this podcast. So maybe that was number one. The Firstly Scholar some years later was number two, and Charlton was number three. It was a lot of fun. People seemed to think I was a good host. I had one or two people come up afterwards say they really enjoyed it and it was really funny. I think people were quite surprised I actually gave a shit about the acts. You know, being comfortable on stage as well, like doing the microphone from and making sure I got everybody's names right. But that's kind of the inevitable byproduct of my stage personality, is that I'm comfortable with people thinking I'm a bit spiky. I'm happy with that. I might be a bit spiky. But at the end of the day, if somebody's coming onto an open mic and they're new and, you know, they're nervous with a microphone, or they don't think they're going to read out very well, it's kind of your job as a host to convince them that it doesn't matter if they fuck up, because they're not going to fuck up, because they know the poem better than anybody else. And the people sitting down, they're not, you know, it's not a paying audience. They're there to listen to somebody read a poem that they might have written, in my case, 2 minutes before going on stage. They're not expecting it to be like a well-rehearsed Broadway musical. So I think a lot of the time people put these pressures on themselves. I don't know why they do it. I think for a lot of writers, psychologically, it's a way to prevent themselves from taking risk. And I think if you're an artist and you're risk-averse, if you avoid risk as an artist, you're right at the edge of not being an artist, because you're avoiding the very thing that you should be doing, which is trying to find something new to say. So, I mean, I always think of poets as the example, perhaps because they're the most recent crowd of people I hang around with. But a lot of stuff does seem very safe at the moment. So it was like my job as a host to say to people, look, you're going to be fine. Don't be nervous. And I enjoy doing that. I mean, I do that on the podcast as well sometimes. Obviously, I'm not going to single out a guest that was nervous, but there was one a few years ago who was really nervous about coming on, and I made it so they weren't nervous. So well done me. And that's a great thing to do, because it's like I get to do a good thing for people, but I don't have to do so whilst working in a charity shop, you know, because a lot of people like to give back to the world, but I can, somebody like me, I couldn't find a way to actually do good that didn't drive me up the wall, because I would like to, sometimes I do think I'd like to work in a charity shop, but then I realize that I actually just want to get hold of the cheap Lego before anybody else does. That's what I really care about. I don't care about people. I don't care about their suffering. I just want cheap Lego. That would be a really good place to end the podcast, wouldn't it? But no, we have more news, if you're willing to listen. I have had a big, big thing happen recently. I won't say who, but a publisher that I quite like has picked up my satirical article about censorship and Roald Dahl books. You may have read it on Substack. It's called Censor Drone. So yeah, that's been picked up. It's been edited, made better by them as well. I've chiseled it away. So that will be launched on the 12th. So next week I'll proudly tell you who's running with it. But at the moment, since they've not yet run with it, I want to kind of keep it a bit of a secret. I'm really pleased about it. Yeah, and I've been writing Earthloop as well. There's been some Earthloop trilogy news. I've worked out where Betty Bynes went after that alien abduction. I've worked out what Zygmunt Merton's relationship is to Lax Morales. Interesting that a UFO researcher and an alien should become friends. So Zygmunt doesn't know that Lax is an alien, at least not in the first few books. The details aren't nailed down right now. It's quite a complicated thing. It has 69 chapters overall, with time travel throughout. So I really need to make it work. It's funny because people keep peddling ChatGPT to me. I think that's just not going to be able to do it, is it? It's not going to be able to do the kind of stuff that I do. It might be able to do really bland, like, legal writing, but I don't think it's actually that good at creative writing. And I think if you read its stories and you think they're any good, that might just be a question of taste, you know, because I read them and I get bored. It's the God's honest truth. It was an interesting thing because somebody was asking me what my opinion on AI is the other day, and I am going to eventually post it to Substack, but I have written a long post about it, but you know me, if I don't find it interesting, I don't post it. So I'm trying to work jokes into it at the moment. But my general opinion on AI, and I think I'll leave on this note, is that artificial intelligence isn't going to replace my writing for the same reason that McDonald's hamburgers didn't replace food. I've been Philip Carter, and next week, or the week after, we might have a special guest. I'll see you next week.